if we truly were to look at what does it mean to be an ethical journalist? To me, what that says is we put story and person above self.
Journalist, academic, award-winning author, high school journalism advisor, college media manager. All of these describe Patrick Johnson, our guest on this week's episode of The Source, Quill and Scrolls podcast. But Patrick's resume doesn't end there. He also served as the mentoring chair for the Journalism Education Association, and he's vice president of the Quill and Scroll Board of Trustees. I'm Jeff Brown, the executive director of the Quill and Scroll Honor Society for High School Journalists. Last week, our Lauren White sat down with Patrick to discuss the intersection of Quill and Scroll's 8 guiding principles with journalistic ethics. His answers were so awesome, we decided to turn the interview into 2 episodes. Today, Patrick tells Lauren about how he came to be a PhD candidate studying ethics and media literacy, and he breaks down what makes an ethical journalist. Enjoy.
Hey, Patrick, thank you so much for coming to chat today.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so kind of before we jump into everything, can you run me through your education and expertise journey?
Yeah, so my journey to where I am today as a PhD candidate at the University of Iowa is slightly lengthy, and it kind of changes and deviates a lot more than I think most people who by 32 have probably had as an experience in their life. It started when I was a wee little kid. My mom and I lived with my grandparents, and my grandpa used to bring home the student newspaper of the high school in our community. And so my first real exposure to journalism was this student newspaper. And it gave me a sense of belonging to the community, because it wasn't the newspaper that was, say, the Chicago Sun-Times or the Chicago Tribune. It was something that was done by people who were just a little bit older than me. And so I'd gotten to high school, and I took the intro to journalism class and rose the ranks to become editor-in-chief and stood in that role for 2 years before I went to college and was like, hey, I want to be a journalism teacher. And so I headed to Marquette University, which we loved to call Carmel North. I had gone to Carmel High School. So myself and 26 other people from my school decided to venture to Milwaukee. And there, I did a couple of things. I was a journalism and secondary education major. So I trained classically to be a journalism teacher, to be a journalist, and to be a student media advisor. And then I also worked for student media and spent a lot of time over the course of those 4 years in a number of roles. I worked for the Tribune, which is the newspaper. I worked for the radio station. I sometimes was a guest on the TV station. I was the last assistant editor of what we called Student Media Interactive, which was kind of like that weird bridge between all of a sudden like web journalism was a thing, but like data journalism was going to be a thing. And then all of a sudden, like social media hadn't existed yet. So we had this like user experience kind of idea before it was real. But most of my time I spent in magazine journalism, which is my favorite place to be. And so upon leaving my senior year, I was the editor-in-chief of the magazine, and I kind of led the convergence of Marquette Student Media, to which is now called Marquette Wire. And I was the first group with my team who kind of got them to where they are a decade later. And so from there, I was pretty fortunate. I got to stay at Marquette. I got to teach. I got to get my first master's degree. And then 2 years in, I was like, hey, I'm done. I think I want to do something else. I wasn't ready yet to get my doctorate. And so I returned to my hometown, taught at my hometown high school, and advised that exact newspaper that was the newspaper that my grandpa used to bring home. And so I became the fourth advisor in the history of the program, 50 plus years, and there had only been four people. And I spent the last 8 years in that role, where I'm very fortunate to do a number of things. In my third year, I was named a Dow Jones Distinguished National Advisor of the Year, which is a big deal in the scholastic journalism world. My program won every single award you possibly can win. I was a regional and statewide journalism teacher of the year. And we flourished, we grew substantially. I started with 12 students on my staff. Upon leaving in 2020, I had 100 plus. We went from one newspaper to a magazine and a robust website, to adding an entire sports program, to adding an entire feature arts and culture magazine. And it was an empire in itself. And so I got to do a lot of cool stuff there. I also was heavily involved with JEA and Quill and Scroll. I am a board member for Quill and Scroll. I was a board member for the Journalism Education Association. So I served as their mentor program chair, and I oversaw the transition of training of new mentors from a in-person training to an online training. In my role as chair, I pretty much worked with every single journalism teacher who was a first or second year journalism teacher. So I had my hands in a place that really got me to think that there's more to what I can do. And it's not that I don't love teaching high school journalism. I do. It's something I genuinely miss. But I couldn't do much else. And so in 2019, I had turned 30 years old. I started thinking about what else I could do with my life. I had some traumatic events happen. Then the coronavirus happened. I submitted my letter of resignation March 3rd, 2020, to essentially 10 days later, the world shut down. And here I am now at the University of Iowa, where I get to do some really wonderful things, not only on the board of Quill and Scroll, but working on the board of the Daily Iowan, doing research in journalism education and news literacy in particular. But mostly my focus is now and has always been the idea of ethics and how do we help young people, especially, figure out what is right and wrong to do in journalistic practice. And quite often, it's much harder for younger people to learn because people who are seasoned veterans tend to not want to tell them. They think you just learn it on the job. So my role has really been the last couple of years trying to figure out how do we professionalize our students better so that they can go into the world, you as a journalist yourself, how can you go into, you know, the state assembly and actually speak to someone in a way that is ethical, not just is plausible, is legal, but what are some of these decisions you're making that you should do versus you shouldn't? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that's where I am today, here speaking with you.
Yeah, because that really brings up like the whole theme of this semester is ethics and really how to be a more ethical journalist. And here at Quill and Scroll, we have our eight guiding principles, which is truth, leadership, loyalty, learning, integrity, initiative, judgment, and friendship. And so we are essentially focusing on how to intertwine ethics with all of these things. So do you want to just kind of start and just like, what does ethics mean to you?
So I think a lot of people have possibly different answers to that question. And the reason they do is because ethics is so culturally and societally constructed. So where you came from, your upbringing, the people you grew up around, the people who taught you, the experiences you've had, genuinely are what create your ethical demeanor, your moral compass, so to speak. So my answer may certainly be different than yours. But I think if we truly were to look at what does it mean to be an ethical journalist? To me, what that says is we put story and person above self. We make decisions for the betterment of a diverse population. And to capture the first tenet of the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics, to pull from one of those eight principles of Quill and Scroll, seeking truth and reporting it is the bedrock to our ethical core. Now, I think what makes Quill and Scroll very different and those eight principles very different and relevant to this conversation and to the audience that you create this podcast for is that ethics has the ability, if taught in a way that looks at learning and leadership and loyalty and initiative, it has the ability to help frame someone's mind moving forward. We know full well that high school journalists may not become college journalists. And if they become college journalists, they may not become professional journalists. Since 2016, we've seen a substantial decline in people pursuing a career in journalism, or at least in the traditional sense, journalism. But what ethics does and what the teaching of ethics does is it's not necessarily just a matter of how do we seek the truth and report it? How do we become leaders that people want to follow? How do we, you know, integrate friendship into our daily lives? To me, what ethics means, especially at the high school student level, and I like to call it the pre-service level, at the college level, is it helps you become a better person regardless of the career you pick. And if journalism is doing what it's meant to do, what it was created to do as the Fourth Estate, when it was established as the true moral institution, if we were to abide by what it was about, then we would become people who favor person over self, community over self. We push to become a stronger population together, rather than a population dedicated to celebrity, to influence, to authority. And that to me is what ethics is. It's this opportunity not to just be a better institution. Ethics to me is how we become a better people. And so if we were to say that everything is an absolute right and wrong, we're not learning. We're just saying this is right and this is wrong. This is black and this is white. This is, we like to call it the categorical imperative when we talk about like foundational ethics. I don't see the world that way. I think ethics, if it's about learning, that means it's about relationships. And if we build, maintain, grow, develop these relationships, that means we're willing to, as you say, change and evolve, and recognizing that 18-year-old me as a journalist is very different than 32-year-old me as a journalist. The first time I ever encountered ethics, at least that I can kind of remember as being a concern, was my senior year of high school. And we had created a publication that had a number of stories that were highly controversial. And people who know me know that I gravitate towards things that are deviant, that are controversial, that tend to cause a ruckus. So me gravitating towards that as a senior in high school makes probably a lot of sense for people. And what had happened is we wrote a series of stories, and I went to a private Catholic school, that were going to cause some problems to our priest, principal, and the board of directors. For example, we had a story about one of our classmates who had just had a baby over Thanksgiving that actually led to us having abortion protesters on campus. We had a story that was a staff editorial about how annoyed students were by parents who were taking their spaces at sporting events. we had a piece that used foul language that we weren't supposed to be using. And the cover piece, the front page article above the fold, I had written, and it was about people piercing their body parts in our bathrooms and in our common spaces. High school me, 17-year-old high school me, didn't think that knowing full well that a friend of mine had pierced a certain body part while we were at lunch in the commons wasn't to me. I was like, ew, but I'm going to write about this. Knowing full well that I had friends that would leave class and go to the bathroom and then they would sit and pierce each other's ear. I didn't think of it as a bad thing. We thought of it as, what a sensational opportunity to write a really great front page story. Those stories would end up having my advisor at the time no longer be the advisor at the end of the year. And now there are different press rights that support that not happening anymore. Granted, private school probably still would have happened. But in that moment, I didn't think about the relationship I had with a number of different people. What were my loyalties, so to speak, if I'm going to borrow from a really great method of thinking, the Potter's box? What were my loyalties? Well, at that point, I wanted a front page story as the editor in chief. I very rarely wrote, and I wanted a story that I knew was going to leave a legacy that was mine. And sure as hell it did. But it also cost people things. My friends who were anonymous sources ended up getting in trouble because I had to turn them over because we were minors. We ended up having different protocols in the school, which is anything a journalist would want, making change, except it wasn't the kind of change that I probably should have wanted. Worst of all, it impacted someone's livelihood, and I didn't even think twice about it. And that is problematic. And I look back on that moment and reflect on that moment and think about, as I've gotten older, how have I reflected on that? And I've changed drastically since that happened 15 years ago. And those moments and processing that moment has really helped me to realize 20-year-old me thought differently. Still was like, hey, that's a story. But started thinking about as I was entering my student teaching and starting to prepare to be an advisor, would I have been okay with that costing me my job? Would I have been okay with my editor-in-chief going rogue, being a maverick, so to speak? 26-year-old me learned how to navigate those decisions and learned how to, from my experience, help my students navigate them differently to not just save my job, but so that they recognize that they are members of a community and that community deserves respect. And that is the ethical conversations they began having. 32-year-old me sits here and says, I was a horrible person, but I also was a kid. And that elevates me to want to do more to help prepare our future journalists. And we are in a place in which ethics, to me at least, needs to become the central focus of our learning and in our education spaces.
Yeah, and I guess you mentioned before the concept of like loyalty. And just that entire idea is always very interesting in journalism. How do you determine who journalists should be loyal to?
That is a very contentious question right now.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go down a memory lane. We're going to do some history lesson right now. Walter Lippmann. So we're going like 1918, 1919, 1920. Which is also when a certain flu pandemic had occurred. So let's keep that in the back of our minds for the context we're in today. Lippmann, at that time, there was heavy competition among newspapers. And Lippmann was a businessman. And what would happen is certain people politically would back your publication with advertising revenue if you weren't going to muckrake them, if you weren't going to write about the bad things that they did. It was backdoor, under the table dealings. But what actually did end up happening? Two things. We had the birth of yellow journalism in the true sense of what it was. So investigative reporting. We also had the birth of objectivity. And arguably, objectivity, which is considered an ethical bedrock of journalism, and I'm sure you have heard it many a times in journalism school, as an ethical bedrock, it emerged from the sole fact that people needed to trust journalism. Science was trusted in 1918, 1919, 1920. Science works on a method. That method is objective. You have a question, you hypothesize, you collect data, you have results, and you report it. What did Walter Lippmann do? Taught journalists to be objective. Have questions, come to hypothesize ideas, collect data, have results, and publish. So for nearly a century, we have had this ethical concept of objectivity. For nearly a century, we forgot that women had yet to have the right to vote. We forgot that there was no civil rights movement yet. We forgot that Stonewall had yet to happen and LGBTQ people were still stuck in the closet. We forgot that we didn't even have the capability for brown people to be recognized with a full and utter population. We still were claiming that people who were of Asian American descent, who had Asian blood, we still called them yellow when that concept was created. Fast forward, George Floyd is murdered. Breonna Taylor is murdered. There's an uprising racially that isn't just an American uprising. It is a worldwide movement. And Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, writes an op-ed in the New York Times essentially saying people should have the military present to stop this. Wes Lowry, a Pulitzer Prize-winning Black journalist, writes a response in which he says, we need to end objectivity in favor of moral clarity. This idea that relationships matter more, that we need to acknowledge the history of what journalism has done as a moral institution. You've got the 1619 Project being thrust right into the middle of all of this. And what happens? You've got all these people now who are claiming what is ethical and what isn't. Who are we loyal to? Why are we loyal to them? Has journalism ever actually been loyal to someone who isn't rich, white, or liberal? Nikki Usher, who's a professor at the University of Illinois, just wrote a book about this same premise. Journalism, are we loyal to people who have access? Christopher Ali, who's at the University of Virginia, just wrote a book about people needing broadband access, that we need to be reaching people if our news is going to actually reach people. You've got Margaret Sullivan at the Washington Post. She's their media critic. Writes a whole book about the disappearance of local news and the fact that our small local papers are shuttering their doors. You have this idea that we had this tremendous news ecosystem. We had towns with multiple newspapers competing with one another to get trust, which made them arguably more quote unquote objective. I argue our loyalties cannot be activism. Our loyalties also cannot be objectivity. Our loyalties must be our communities. they must be our relationships. And I've been spending a lot of time recently trying to figure out how we do this, because we've got a lot of politicians wielding the First Amendment in wrong ways on both sides of the aisle. We have now either picked or chosen, you're either objective or you're an activist. I don't think so. To me, I've been thinking a lot about this idea of what does it mean to be sustainable? All of these papers are closing. We've got these hedge funds that are eating up our news ecosystem. But yet, we have these nonprofits that are bringing news back. So how do we make that sustainable? And I don't mean it just purely as an environmental concept. How do we be culturally responsive? How do we provide a system that people want to come back to, knowing full well that we are creating an environment that allows them to flourish and grow? And so to me, loyalty is rooted in this idea of stewardship, which is the value closely tied to sustainability as a practice, as a principle, as a concept. To me, we are stewards. We are here for the betterment of our process, of our practice, of our institution, of our system. When we were established as the Fourth Estate, we were established as stewards of the people. Along the way, we let celebrity and clicks get in our way of being stewards. We let objectivity overshadow the marginalized communities we deserve to serve. We let activism as a term get co-opted and wielded against us. But in the end, if we are going to be loyal and we are going to be a better and more ethical journalism, we must learn to be stewards of the people. Whether that means being objective, whether that means being activists, to me, being a steward means you're transparent, you're accountable, you're accurate, and you sure as hell are willing to put your relationships above all else. And that to me is a more sustainable journalism practice, a more ethical and sustainable journalism practice.
That was Patrick Johnson speaking with Lauren White in the first of two episodes discussing Quill and Scroll's guiding principles and their intersection with journalistic ethics. I'm Jeff Brown, and tune in next week for part two. Until then, fight for the truth wherever you are.